And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Good evening, 11:06 on January 30th, 2016, program 47 of the WGN Radio Theater. I am your host, Carl Amari. To the right of me, the very lovely Lisa Wolf. Lovely Lisa flows really nicely, right?
Hi, Carl. Good to be here.
Lovely Lisa. Also, our executive producer, Mike Costella, is here, and he is right there across the council from me, and the one and only Shane Reardon, our producer, in the booth, hitting all the right buttons. Right, Shane? Everything
sometimes
good?
Yeah. I feel okay today. Yeah. I think we might be okay.
Okay, we're going to be good. The classic radio shows are going to air for people. That's what matters, because that's what we do here on the WGN Radio Theater. Right, Lisa?
Right. Whatever you say, I just agree with you, Carl.
Program 47.
Yeah, right?
Right. We're going to be hopefully doing this for a long time. Maybe we'll begin to. We're in show 1,975.
Yeah, nice, we might lose track by then, but we're going to make that.
Yes, because math is not my best skill.
No.
No, not at all. This evening, all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning, we have radio dramas from the Golden Age. We have Philo Vance Detective with Jackson Beck. We have Fibber McGee and Molly. Great comedy. Then a good mystery on The Mysterious Traveler, starring Maurice Tarplin. All of this is brought to you in part by our sponsor, Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars as Bruce Wayne in Batman in the upcoming action-adventure Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, the first live-action film to feature both Batman and Superman.
All right. If you know who this actor Lisa is talking about is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. In 2006, he starred as George Reeves, also known as Superman, in Hollywoodland.
Well, if you did shoot me and the bullet bounced off, it might accidentally hit someone else. We don't want that to happen, do we?
All right. Who is that actor? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner, and we'll give away what, Lisa?
We are going to give away two tickets to The Man Who Murdered Sherlock Holmes playing at the Mercury Theater.
Oh, you don't want to miss that? Call us right now. We'll find our winner after this short break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Well, if you did shoot me and the bullet bounced off, it might accidentally hit someone else. We don't want that to happen, do we?
And let's talk to Matt on the phone from Downers Grove. Hey, Matt.
Hey.
Hey, we're glad you called in. Can you recognize that voice?
Yeah, it's Ben Affleck.
It is Ben Affleck. And, of course, he was in Hollywoodland, and he will be in Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. You are a winner. We are so excited to give you two tickets to the world premiere musical adventure. The Man Who Murdered Sherlock Holmes is playing at the Mercury Theater right now through March 20th. It's Mercury Theater is fantastic. It was just renovated. It's on Southport right near Wrigley Field. We hope that you will love that. Check them out at Mercury Theater Chicago. .com. Are you a big theater fan?
Yes, I am.
Excellent.
Oh, you're going to like that, Sherlock Holmes. I think Ben Affleck is heir to the Affleck insurance, right?
Yeah, no.
Probably
but it's
not.
Close.
Okay.
Just one letter off.
I was wondering.
Yeah.
He's kind of quacky, that guy, anyway.
Quacky.
Ben Affleck. He's the new Batman.
Yeah.
New, and here in this movie, he played Superman. Kind of
exactly.
Weird, right?
Yeah.
That's probably the first time that's ever happened where an actor has played Superman and Batman. Really, he wasn't Superman. He was playing George Reeves. If you have not seen that movie, Hollywoodland, Fantastic movie.
He's a great actor.
2006.
Too.
Check it out. When that came out, I saw it at the theaters, and I really like was seeing George Reeves. You know, he did such a great job of playing George Reeves, a.k.a. Superman, in that. Terrific movie. Check it out. All right. It's time now for our first classic radio show. I want to remind our listeners that we are here, Lisa and I and Mike and Shane, and also Kit Clem, who is here making sure we all do the right thing. Or, you know,
okay.
He's watching out.
I know.
Us.
I'm trying hard.
Don't mess up.
No.
We are here Saturdays and Sundays, so mark your calendar. We play these wonderful radio dramas every Saturday and every Sunday from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. Got the time right.
Lisa. Yes, we're all good
11
here.
11 p.m. till 2 a.m.
I will make sure you are here, Carl.
All right. We do 6 hours of broadcasting here, 3 hours on Saturday, 3 hours on Sunday, all classic radio. And our first show tonight is Philo Vance Detective. It was created by S.S. Van Dyne. And Philo Vance was a very popular detective, seen in books, movies, and heard on radio. He was a stylish, highly intelligent, cultured private eye. He was sort of an Americanized Sherlock Holmes working in New York. The movies had some great stars as Philo Vance, William Powell, Warren William, and Basil Rathbone all played Philo Vance in the films. On radio, Jose Ferrer was the first Philo Vance, but Jackson Beck, who is a very recognizable voice, he was the voice of On the Adventures of Superman, he was the announcer, and did a ton of radio, was the voice of Philo Vance on radio. And Joan Alexander played his secretary, Ellen Deering. I think you will enjoy this. A good detective adventure. Now, let's go back to June 13th, 1950. It's called The Full Dress Murder Case. It stars Jackson Beck, part one of Philo Vance Detective.
Yep, gets pretty lonely pounding a beat in this neighborhood, Mr. Gorham. Glad to walk a little way with you.
Oh, it's just the other way around, officer. Walking home alone at midnight in this section isn't my idea of fun. Eh?
You know pretty near all the characters around here, don't you?
All of them that ever checked into the hotel I clerk at. That is, if you're charitable and can call it a hotel.
Ah, poor fellas. I kind of feel sorry for some of them.
Yes, some of them. Yes, fellas like Johnny Edwards, Boxcar Charlie, or Billy Duke. Nice boys who just never quite made it. They'll work, only nobody will give them a job.
Well, Mr. Gorham, everybody's got their own problems.
Yes, indeed.
Some guys who... Look where?
Well, over there, behind the ash cans, there's a body lying there.
There is. Well, we'll soon see about that. Oh, it's a body, all right.
Oh.
A body in a full-dress suit.
Oh, that is all I need. I won't sleep for a week now.
I've got to phone in a report on this right away.
Yes, hurry.
Some swell got himself murdered. Why did he have to do it on my beat?
Officer, wait just a minute.
For what?
I think I know this man.
Now, Mr. Gorham, you know a lot of the characters from around here on account of your job, but you think you know this fella in the full-dress suit?
I'm positive I know him. Evening clothes or no evening clothes, I know him. He stays at my hotel anytime he has a buck for a room. The dead guy, all dressed up in a full-dress suit, is Boxcar Charlie.
District Attorney Vance, if I can't have a siren on my car.
Well, there's the little matter of seeing that guilty people are punished, that the laws are upheld, little things like that, Markham.
I know. But I think this siren is a throwback to the days when I was a kid and wanted to be a fireman.
I wanted to be a streetcar conductor.
I'll have to have a bell put in this car for you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, there's the spot where they found the body, Vance. Just up the street where the crowd is gathered.
Glad I was with you when the call came in. A man definitely identified as a derelict, but wearing full evening dress when he was found murdered. Fascinating combination of circumstances.
I thought you'd like it. Now, let's see what we can do about finding out who killed him. After you, Vance.
Right.
Surprising the crowd that'll gather at any hour of the day or night just to see something unusual.
Oh, these people have plenty of time. Excavating work doesn't start for 7 hours or so, and they have to watch something.
That's so.
Let us through, please.
I'm sorry. Let us through. You don't mind.
What happened?
Please, just out of my way, please. Thank you. Hello, officer. I'm District Attorney Markham.
Oh, I recognize you, Mr. Markham. I'm Riley, 23rd Precinct. I found the body.
Yes, I know. I see it hasn't been removed.
I'm waiting for the men from the morgue now, Mr. Markham.
While we're waiting, is it all right for me to examine the body?
Go ahead, Vance. It's all right, Riley. He's Philo Vance.
Oh, Vance is it. Go right ahead, Mr. Vance.
Thank you. I don't think I'll be more than a few moments.
Right, Vance. Officer.
Yes, sir?
Your report said the dead man lived at a very cheap hotel down in this section. Yet, when you found him, he was wearing evening clothes.
That it did, Mr. Markham. And don't ask me to explain it, because I can't.
You won't have to, officer, but I think I can.
What was that?
Vance, you took one look at the body, and you can explain why a down-and-out individual would be wearing a dress suit.
Not only that, but I think I have an idea where I can start looking for the killer of our friend, Boxcar Charlie.
Now, Vance, I've seen you do astounding things, but never anything like this. How could you possibly find a clue so quickly?
Charlie was stabbed, but the knife isn't here, so it couldn't be that.
It isn't. And I never saw Charlie while he was living, if that's what you're thinking, Markham.
I'm not thinking anything at the moment.
All right, my friend, let's leave it just that way.
Personally, I never saw anything like this.
All right.
You're pretty smart, Mr. Vance.
Thank you. And now I'm going to investigate the clue I found, which will give me an idea of just how smart I am.
Okay, bum out. Come on,
George, out. Just a cup of coffee, George. Just a cup of coffee.
Get out, I said. This is a diner, not a free lunch joint. Willie, open the door. I'm going to toss this guy out of here.
Come on, George.
Well, that's that.
Yeah.
Get rid of him, Willie.
Maybe he'll be back.
I doubt it. Suppose we get organized on that gimmick we got going. Everything's all set up for us.
I don't think so. I got another idea about that.
What's the matter with you? Do you have to argue about everything?
It's the use of living if you can't argue. No fun in agreeing with people.
And it's no fun in listening to you doubt everything either. Look, let's get something straight.
As if anybody as crooked as us could get anything straight.
There you go again. Anyhow, here's something you can't argue about. Boxcar Charlie is dead, ain't he?
It seemed like that when I stuck a knife in him, but I ain't no doctor. I ain't sure, you know.
I am. He walked into this lunchroom of mine at the wrong time. He heard something he shouldn't have heard, and he had to go.
Well, maybe he didn't hear nothing. We ain't sure he did.
We couldn't take any chances, could we?
Now, don't get sore at me. I killed him, don't forget. Anybody traces that knife and back to us, we can forget about this place and that big plan we got and everything else.
Nobody's gonna do that, don't worry.
Yeah? Who's doing the contradicting now? Okay, Georgie. We got rid of the one guy who might interfere with us. We got clear sailing from here in. It's going to be happy days here again for us unless...
Now what?
Unless somebody gets hep to what we're doing. And then it ain't happy days here again. It's goodbye forever.
Hello, District Attorney Markham speaking.
Anybody that calls the DA's office at 2 o'clock in the morning doesn't rate as dignified an answer as that.
Hello, Vance.
Hello. I thought you'd come right back to your office when I left you after we found that dressed-up body.
And I thought you'd get in touch with me, so we both thought correctly.
That's right. It's a little difficult getting information at this hour, but I think I've finally come up with something.
Something like what?
Something like what I promised you. A place to start investigating the murder of Boxcar Charlie.
I thought you knew that when you looked at the body.
I had only a general idea. It isn't that any longer.
What do you mean?
It's gone, like all good ideas, from the general to the particular.
Oh.
I just thought I'd let you know I'm on the way to a certain diner.
You hungry, Vance?
For information, I've been to 5 diners since I left you. According to the phone book, there's only one more particular diner left in town.
One?
Apparently, I've left it to last.
And like most of the cases we've had in this office, when it comes to a lead on a killer, I've left it to Vance.
pretty busy, don't they, Connie?
Oh, I don't mind. This mission is part of my life, George. I like helping people.
Why not?
Oh, and I want to thank you for bringing those sandwiches. The men will appreciate
them. Oh, I was glad to do it. What's the use of running a coffee shop if you can't give away the food you're not going to sell anyway? How's the big thing coming?
Oh, the benefit?
Yeah.
Better than I had any right to expect. Everybody's helped. They announced it over the radio. The newspaper men have been wonderful, and people are actually buying tickets.
Good.
I'll bet I sold more than $1,000 worth today alone.
Why not? It's a good cause. A mission like the one you run here helps people.
It helps unfortunate people. Oh, but the others are being very kind.
Well, why shouldn't they?
Well.
After all, what are other people except unfortunate people who got a break?
Oh, philosophy from a coffee shop owner. Wow. Well, George, I never believed it. Anyhow, I've got $3,000 in cash right here in this envelope, and it'll be $10,000 by tomorrow, I hope.
All I can say is you're a pretty nice gal, Connie. Personally, I...
Oh, here comes a customer, George. Excuse me.
Hello, lady. I'm a poor unfortunate. I sure would like a cup of coffee. Maybe if you had something to go with it, I'd like that, too.
Well, that's what we're here for. It's rather late, but I just got in a fresh batch of sandwiches, so if you'll sit down...
Gee, sure. Thanks. Join me, bud?
No, thanks. Connie.
Yes, George?
Don't you think you ought to put this money in a safe or a bank or something?
Oh, not tonight anymore. I haven't got a safe and the banks aren't open. Besides, nobody knows how much there is in this envelope.
Well, $3,000 is a lot of dough.
Really?
Hey, that bum is going for it.
Stop him, George. George, stop him.
That I will. Give me that envelope.
Let go, man. Let go.
I'll let go, all right. This.
Oh, George.
Oh. I didn't want to do that, but... Then you didn't want to lose that $3,000 either, did you, Connie?
No. Oh, I'll get some water for this poor fellow. Oh, and George, it was good of you to stop him from stealing that money.
Nobody touches that money, Connie.
You mean nobody but me, of course.
Sure. That's exactly what I mean.
All righty, that's the first portion of Philo Vance Detective, June 13th, 1950, the full-dress murder case starring Jackson Beck. And if you were turning the dial, spinning the dial right there, on and you landed on WGN Radio, and all of a sudden you heard a classic radio show, and you're like, what is this? That's what I used to do when I was a kid, listening to classic radio and enjoying these shows. I would turn the dial and try to get radio stations that would play classic radio. And when I did, I was like, okay, what station is this? Well, let me tell you, it's WGN Radio, AM 720, one of the greatest radio stations in the country. And we play classic radio shows every Saturday and Sunday night, 11 p.m. till 2 in the morning. All of your favorites. We play The Shadow and Jack Benny, play Burns and Allen, Boston Blackie, all the westerns like Gunsmoke and Have Gun Will Travel, sci-fi programs like Dimension X, X-1, and we want to hear from you, our listeners, on what you want to hear. And the easiest way to do that, right, Mike, is to go to our Facebook page.
Absolutely. Go to Facebook and look us up, WGN Radio Theater, and like us, and check out all the pictures that I'm posting of all of these actors in these old-time radio dramas.
Yeah, I think you're posting a picture of Jackson Beck in sort of a Philo Vance-looking trench coat, right?
Yep.
And then a little later we'll have Jim and Mary and Jordan, Fibber, McGee and Molly, and then Maurice Tarplin, a good picture of him at the Mutual microphone performing the role of the mysterious traveler. So we have some great pictures at our Facebook page as well.
I also wanted to mention how honored we are to be a part, to have old-time radio and all of us a part of WGN and working with the other great shows here at WGN.
Oh, yeah.
So
terrific.
We feel very privileged
here
to be a part of this,
yeah,
family.
We've always felt like if we could ever find our way to WGN, it would be a real marriage, because we know that our listeners here are very loyal. WGN listeners are very loyal, and these radio shows are super cool to tune in. And I think once you hear them, you'll want to come back and listen to more, because we're always playing. We never repeat a show. You'll always get six new shows every weekend, and you'll get all your favorites. And please post to us so we know what you want to hear. All right, let's take a quick break, and then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa, would you care to dance?
With who?
Me.
Oh, yeah.
I have two left feet,
sure,
but I would like to ask you for this dance.
Yeah, sure, Carl.
You sound like you really want to.
I do, sure,
yeah, you
Carl.
Sound very excited about it.
Yeah, I said, sure, Carl. It's kind of a romantic song
it is.
There.
We had a little party at Casa Amari yesterday.
Yes, we did, and we have the videos to prove it.
Yeah, we had a little party. We had some friends over, and Lisa and her
friends
husband.
Friends and me.
Yeah.
I'm not in the friend category,
no.
Just
Lisa,
outside.
Well, you're like a worker friend.
Oh.
That's like a worker bee.
Oh, that's like different.
Lisa brought her husband Dan over yesterday to Casa Amari. I had Mike Costella there. He had other friends there. And we had some good food from Sweet Caroline's.
Yes,
Sweet Caroline's
it was delicious.
Catered the event. It was unbelievable. Sweet
and
Caroline's.
So was the.
The ambiance?
Well, the ambiance, and so were the guests.
Sweet Caroline's is in Hoffman Estates, and they did an amazing job. We want to thank them. And a terrific, terrific company. We played a lot of ping pong. We'll talk a little bit more about the ping pong a little later, because Lisa was saying she's going to beat me at ping pong. Yeah, right. We'll talk more about that later. But right now, let's get back to this. Sound good, Mike? Want to do that?
Absolutely.
Lisa, good?
Okay, sure.
Let's get back to Full Dress Murder Case on Philo Vance Detective.
Hello.
Look, the joint is open, but nothing is going on. The boss is out, and I don't sling no hash.
I wasn't looking for food.
And what are you doing here at 2:30 in the morning? Slumming? Could be that. You look like something from uptown. Huh?
It doesn't matter where I come from, does it?
Maybe it does.
Now, don't be difficult, friend. I'm Philo Vance. Huh? That name mean anything to you?
No. But I'm glad for your sake you got it. Everybody's got to have some kind of a name. Of course, you overdid it
now,
a little.
Now, listen, you...
No, hey, the coat. Don't bend the coat. Relax.
Okay.
What do you want?
I want to know whether you ever heard of a man they called Boxcar Charlie.
Not that I remember.
He never came in here?
Not that I know of.
You around this place very often?
Not so you could notice.
Where's the owner?
George, I don't know. Out somewhere, I guess.
I see. I'm not getting anywhere. Is there anything you do know, my friend?
Yeah, sure. Try me on that 2 and 2 business.
Look, I've had no sleep and I've very little patience left. Get me a cup of coffee.
Hey, why don't you drink milk, huh? It's better for growing boys. Now beat it, Sonny. I'm awful busy doing nothing.
I've got nowhere to go.
You don't get out of here, they'll be digging you a place to go. Now beat it, I said.
That's right, you did say that. Now, is there any way you know of making me leave?
Yeah, just one very simple way. I ask you nicely, and then this.
Ah, that was better than walking around the reservoir. Gave me some exercise, but very little else.
What else did you want? What happened to Willie?
Willie is out. You, George?
Yeah. What hit him besides you?
The truck that just happened to be going through your coffee shop.
That's a shortcut, I guess. More trucks go through here.
George, I've got some questions to ask you.
Isn't that funny? I got no answers. I'll look around for some if you like.
Now, don't you be cute.
Why should I answer anything you ask? Whoever you are.
Look at Willie. Is that a good enough reason?
What'd he do, argue with you? Take the other side or whatever you said? He always did that. You shouldn't have got sore.
The next time I feel my emotions carry me away, I'll remember to ask your permission.
Yeah, do that.
George, I'm Philo Vance. I want to know something about a man called Boxcar Charlie.
Who?
Well, here we go again. George, remember Willie here?
Oh, Boxcar Charlie. Why didn't you say so? What do you want to know about him?
When did you see him last?
Yesterday sometime. Why?
He was knifed to death earlier tonight.
He was?
Yes.
Well, ain't that too bad. Why, he didn't have very much to live for, though, did he? What are you, a detective?
Not exactly.
Well, in that case, if I was you, you know what I'd do?
Should I?
Yeah. If you're smart, you'd follow your nose right out of here. It's the only way I know of keeping it out of a business that don't concern you.
This is District Attorney Markham. The Full Dress Murder Case opened with the finding of the knifed body of Boxcar Charlie, derelict. When discovered, Charlie's body was clothed in full evening dress, which led Philo Vance to announce he knew where to start looking for the killer. Vance told me that a certain diner would supply a clue. And how he arrived at that, or what happened at the diner when he went there, I have yet to find out. Vance is here, however. Vance, I have a theory about the evening clothes.
Have you, Markham?
Yes. Boxcar Charlie wasn't a tramp. He was living in the slums for some reason. Actually, he lived a double life and was known by quite another name in society. That would account for his full dress.
Yes, it would.
Well, then you agree that what I believe is possible.
Oh, definitely. Of course, I haven't done any investigation along those lines, but it is possible.
If you haven't investigated, it's because you're on an entirely different and chances are a much more logical angle.
Well, it is different, I'll tell you that.
Will you also tell me what it is, what other reason there could be for a broken-down character to be wearing top hat and tails?
No, I will not. Not yet. But I must very shortly.
Well, that's something. And by the way, why must you?
Because you'll find out for yourself very shortly.
Well, that's interesting news. Tell me what you found out at George's diner, will you, Vance?
I think I found out who killed Charlie.
Just like that.
Yes. I have several reasons for thinking that. One of them being the fact that it was so hard to get information about Charlie from the owner of the diner and his friend Willie.
How do you know they knew him?
That I've got to keep to myself until I'm sure they did. Remember, I said I only think I know our killers. When I'm sure and when I find why Charlie was killed, I'll let you know. And let you in on how I know.
Connie?
Oh, I'm over here, George. Come on over.
Brought you some fresh coffee from the shop this morning, Connie.
Oh, thanks. Would you set it down right there, please?
Sure.
Thanks. Guess how much came in this morning?
A lot.
$8,000, George. I've got over $11,000 right here. Isn't it wonderful? I'll be able to build a sleeping dormitory and put in a kitchen and... Oh, golly, I think people are nice, don't you?
Some of them, Connie. I still think you ought to put that money in a safe place.
Oh, I will. As soon as someone comes in to relieve me, I'll go to the bank. Oh, it was wonderful opening those letters and seeing all the money that...
Hold everything, you two.
What? George, he's got a gun. George!
What's the matter with your boyfriend, lady? Can't he talk?
What do you want? This is a mission. There's nothing here you can steal.
I wouldn't say that. I'll take that envelope on that desk, lady.
Oh, no, please. That isn't my money. It belongs to
me. It's going to belong to me. No. That's all I care about. Now, hand it over.
George.
Okay, Connie. Now, look, you. That money is charity dough. It's supposed to help poor people.
What's the matter? You think I'm rich? Give me that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, now that's better. Now, both of you be nice and quiet for 5 minutes.
No, you don't. I knocked the gun out of his hand. Grab it, Connie.
All right.
You're not grabbing any gun, lady.
George.
Hold it. I got my gun back, and you got your boyfriend on the
floor. Please.
Now, see that he stays there for a few minutes, and you stay here, too, to take care of him, which will be also taking care of yourself. Over 10 grand already, Georgie, and I ain't through yet.
It'll be over 11,000.
I don't think so.
Again, he don't think so. Don't you ever agree with anything, Willie?
Not if I can help it. Yeah, one thing.
What's that?
That is a pip of a shiner you got on your right eye. I didn't know I could hit so hard. When I clipped you with
Jim
the mission, Georgie, I wasn't trying.
You didn't. I faked getting knocked out, and you know it.
Well, then what's with the eye?
That's smart, Alec. Philo Vance has been around, hasn't he? I suppose he hears about the stick-up of the mission and starts putting two and two together and finds I was at the mission when a hole-up took place.
Oh, so you gave yourself a black eye. Smart guy.
Uh-huh.
And on you, it don't look bad.
Big joke.
Hey, now, where did I stop counting?
It was over 10,000. I don't know the exact figure.
Well, we'll call it 10,000 at 20. That was about it. Hey, Georgie, somebody's trying the door.
Oh, shut up and he'll go away, whoever it is.
Come on, open up in there. I heard you talking. Open up.
Yeah, that sounds like Vance.
Yeah, for once, I wish I could argue with you. You better open up as soon as I stash this money out of sight.
Okay, get rid of it. I'm going to open the door.
All right.
Hold it, I'm coming.
Okay, Georgie, let him in.
Okay. Hello, Vance.
Hello. Aren't you open for business?
Does it look like we are?
No. I came over to see you about that holdup at the mission, George. I understand you were quite a hero.
Well, are you back again?
Apparently. Right at the moment, I want to talk to George. Any objections?
Not from me, no.
I thought you were investigating Boxcar Charlie's murder, Vance. How come a stick-up interests you?
There might possibly be a connection, you know. That's a lovely eye you have.
Like it? Maybe you'd like one to match.
Willie would talk you out of trying. But I'm hoping he won't, if you know what I mean. Have any trouble seeing out of it?
Not a bit. My left eye is awfully good. Well, you're here, Vance. I'm still waiting to find out why.
Just to get your story of the holdup.
What story? Guy came in with a gun. He grabbed the envelope with the money in it with his left hand. He started backing away when I knocked the gun out of his mitt. Clipped me while I was trying to grab the envelope, and that's all.
It probably ain't, Vance. Ask him more questions.
I really don't have to, Willie. I'm quite certain I know all the answers now.
Miss Connie here and I have been waiting quite a while for you, Vance.
Yes,
I'm sorry, Markham. My apologies, Miss Connie.
Quite all right.
But I wanted to be very sure of my ground first.
And are you now, Mr. Vance?
Yes. I know George and Willie killed Boxcar Charlie. I know why they did it.
Oh?
And I know both of them were in on the plan to rob your mission of the benefit money.
We don't have to know very much more than that to make our arrest, Vance. I'm still waiting to find out the reason Boxcar Charlie was dressed in evening clothes, by the way.
I'm so glad he was, Markham. It made things so much easier.
Not for me.
Well, Mr. Vance, if you know who killed Charlie, if you know it was Willie and George and you know they both robbed me, what are you waiting for? Why don't you let Mr. Markham arrest them so I can get that money?
I want you to try and get it without our having to arrest them, Miss Connie.
What?
You took the word right out of my mouth, Miss Connie.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be mysterious. What I meant was that if you'll do one thing for me, Miss Connie...
Yes?
We'll have two killers in custody before nightfall.
I know where George lives, Miss Connie. I sure am anxious to do something for you on account of all the coffee you give me at the mission.
Oh, that's perfectly all right. Just point out the house to me.
It ain't really a house. It's kind of like a basement. It's right here. It's right there, Miss Connie. Only I sure hope you ain't going to get tangled up with him. I sure hope you ain't, Miss Connie.
I'll be all right. And thank you very much.
It's all right. It's sure all right. I'd sure like to come over to the mission sometime.
Any time at all.
Yeah? Who is it?
It's me. Connie from the mission.
Well, I never expected you here.
I know you didn't. Hello, George. Hi, Willie.
You're all we need here.
Of course, I'm delighted to have you visit me, Connie, but I can't think of any reason why you're here.
I can.
I think Willie's got something.
He said it.
Look, George, you don't think I fell for that phony holdup, do you? I know Willie didn't hit you hard enough to knock you down. I let him grab that money. And now I'm here for a cut.
Oh.
For once, I agree with you, George.
I have a little information, boys. Philo Vance knows the whole score, too. And if you don't land, you two characters are cooked.
So you're not the big-hearted dame who only lived to pass out coffee to bums, are you, Connie?
You want to talk about me or you?
All right.
Vance knows you killed Boxcar Charlie, and he knows Charlie probably overheard you two planning the stick-up, and so you killed him.
Oh, that Vance, how could he know that?
That ain't important. Connie, you've earned your cut, and you'll get it.
Fine.
Now, can you stall, Vance, if we make a three-way cut of the dough we got?
Maybe.
And I think I know how Vance located us. But does he know we faked that hold-up, Georgie and me?
He sure does.
How could he know that? We didn't do anything.
That's a matter of opinion.
Vance.
And District Attorney Markham.
Yes.
Oh, how well did I do, Mr. Vance?
Hey, what is this? Snapping off the lock on the door so we could get in was excellent, Miss Connie.
Hey, that dame was a phony, a phony. How do you like that? And these characters heard us admit we killed Charlie.
The window, Willie. Let's get out the window.
Oh, yeah. Grab Willie, Markham.
Right. One down. How are you doing, Markham?
Watch.
Well, I'd say you were doing very well. And now, Miss Connie, your money is probably in this place somewhere.
I hope so.
I think we'll be able to find it and officially close this case.
Oh, no, you don't, Vance.
No? Why not?
First, I want to know how you tracked Boxcar Charlie's murder to George and Willie and how you knew that holdup was faked.
All right, Markham, I'll tell you. But let's take George and Willie downtown first, and I'll tell you how I knew second. Been puzzled as to why Boxcar Charlie was wearing a full-dress suit when he was killed, aren't you?
Among other things, I am puzzled about that, yes.
Well, when I saw the full dress he was wearing, I noticed there were two worn spots about an inch and a half wide on each shoulder. Now, what would make worn spots like that?
I haven't the slightest idea.
I thought it might be from a sandwich sign that was being carried around. The straps from the sign would wear down the cloth just that way.
That still doesn't tell you anything. Rather, it doesn't tell me anything.
I believed that if the man were in evening clothes, there had to be a reason for it. I believed he was carrying a sign advertising something to do with high hat or full dress. I looked in the phone book.
Yes, I remember you telling me you used the phone book.
I did, and found a number of high hat diners.
Uh-huh.
Five of them, to be exact. I investigated them all until I found George's place.
It sounds very simple now when you tell it. Do you mind telling me how you knew the holdup at the mission wasn't on the level?
Not at all. According to Miss Connie's story and George's, he was standing facing the masked holdup man.
Yes.
And was trying to get the envelope with the money in it out of that individual's left hand.
That's right.
Then the holdup character allegedly hit George in the eye and dropped him.
That's the story George and Connie told.
Certainly, but George's eye made it a lie. You see, in that situation, the holdup man must have hit George in the left eye.
Yeah.
Yet it was George's right eye that was black. An indication that somewhere along the line there was something a little bit spurious.
No doubt about that. George probably blackened his own eye to make his story and Connie's corroboration really stand up.
Yes.
Your theory of why George and Willie killed Charlie has been borne out by their confession, so I guess that's the end of them.
The end of them and of the full dress murder case.
That's without a doubt an organ, Lisa.
Without a doubt.
I have no doubt in my mind that was not a big orchestra there. That was one person at an organ playing the heck out of it.
Playing mysterious music.
It's like there's the Philo Vance theme. I could just see them like really getting into it, you know, right? Playing that organ like, oh, like this is the most important job on the face of the earth.
Hey,
right?
that's good. We all have to think our job is the most important.
Absolutely.
One.
No doubt. All right, that's Philo Vance. I wish I was as smart as Philo Vance. You know? Yeah. He solved that murder, like, knew that it was the left eye and not the right eye.
I wish you were, too.
Gosh. All right, June 13, 1950, the full dress murder case, Jackson Beck. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, we're back. WGN Radio Theater. I think that's the name of the show, right?
They haven't changed
it on us. It's the one we came up with, and Todd and Stephanie liked it. That would be me.
That would be me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, when they Todd said, what do you want to call the show? I'm like, well, it's radio theater. It's radio drama.
So the WGN and, Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
And it's and the station is WGN.
How about just Carl Amari? The Carl Amari Show?
You know, it crossed
you
my
know,
mind.
You know, like the Rokan Show,
mind.
The Carl Amari Show?
No, but, you know, it's not about, you know, it's not about me, Lisa.
Are
it's
sure?
about... Nah, it's about
Carl.
The classic radio shows. You know, there's no I in team. You know what I mean? Right? This is what I've been told.
I'm going to remind you that.
This is what I've been told. It's all about the classic radio show. So let's call the show the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari. That way,
with Carl Amari.
You know, all of the, you know, it all gets in there.
It's right.
Ah, oh, there's some beautiful girls out there. Hi, beautiful girls waving
you
to us.
You think all girls are beautiful.
Yeah, women are beautiful. Absolutely. Yeah, they're waving. You know, it's nice out. This has been a great winter or
it
what?
It is. It's 40-something out
it's
there.
It's amazing. Yeah, I love it. And, hey, you know what? Our next hour, we have Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Yay.
Our listeners have been saying, hey, we want more comedy. So we have a Fibber, McGee, and Molly coming your way, a terrific show from 1939. And then in our third hour, it's a great mystery. Be ready for that. Maybe make a little pizza or something and get in bed.
Yeah, but David Jennings told us
eat
no popcorn and cookies in bed.
Oh, really? Yeah, you got to have the shop vac, as he said, right?
Yeah.
A shop vac.
You're going to eat pizza in
yes,
bed.
Yes, I am. At 3 o'clock in the morning when I get home, I'm going to listen to the podcast.
That's why you're still single, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly why I'm
tell
still
him,
single.
David.
just checking.
But I eat good pizza, though. You'd want to have some. I'm telling
yeah,
you.
Yeah, but you shouldn't do it alone. That's
yeah.
the deal.
Well, I'm
there's
alone.
A lot of things.
I'm
there.
A lonely
you
guy.
You can say that about a lot of things,
I'm a
David.
Lonely guy, David. Ah, familiar theme of the WGN Radio Theater. So happy to be here on a Saturday night. And, of course, we'll be back here Sunday night. We're here every single Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. Is that right, Lisa?
Yes, we'll actually be back tonight because
really,
it's already Sunday morning, so we're coming back tonight, Sunday night.
You know?
We cannot stay away.
I appreciate you correcting me.
No, I wasn't really correcting you. I was just saying we're...
No, I get that wrong sometimes, and I do, This is very true, though. Saturday and Sundays, and since it is already Sunday, we'll be back here tonight. Thank you, Lisa.
Yes, we'll take a little nap.
About 20 hours or so, we'll be back here doing this again. And you know what? Tonight, we have three more shows. Want to know what they are?
I sure do.
Okay. So, Sunday night at 11 p.m. till 2 in the morning, we're going to have The Great Gildersleeve.
Love it.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Love it.
And Dragnet.
Did I pick
Jack
three great
Webb.
Shows?
Yes, you did, Lisa. Thank you so much. In this hour, it's Fibber, McGee, and Molly. And then in the next hour, The Mysterious Traveler. We play all your favorite classic radio shows here on the WGN Radio Theater. We have a Facebook page, right, Mike?
Absolutely, we do.
What is that again?
WGN Radio Theater.
Yeah,
Look us up, like us, and check it out.
And we also have a website, which has our whole schedule on there. If you want to know what we're playing each week, go to our website, which is WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com. If you click through to our main site, there are 10 classic radio shows waiting for you to download. They're absolutely free. 10 of the greatest radio shows. You'll love that. And all of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming comedy My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, which is the sequel to My Big Fat Greek Wedding and set 10 years after the original.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, and I have to say that I have a little crush on this guy, and I actually met him and worked with him once.
Wow,
so
very nice. I'm in this movie?
One of my other crushes.
Oh, okay, okay. I was just wondering. Okay, so this actor, here's a little hint, and what are you going to win if you get this?
Oh, you're going to win a pair of tickets to the world premiere of The Man Who Murdered Sherlock Holmes playing at the Mercury Theater.
Wow, very cool. The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint to the celebrity Lisa's got a crush on. He starred as Jesse in Full House from 1987 until 1985.
Michelle, come here. Now, we're going to have a little chat, you and I. See, the name of the game is hide and go seek. You're playing hide and say, here I am. Capiche?
All righty. 1987 to 1995. Sorry. Yeah, very good, Lisa. Lisa catches all my mistakes.
That's what I'm here for.
There's a lot of them, too. Thankfully, she catches them all. We'll find our winner right after this break.
This is the one and only WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip again.
Michelle, come here. Now, we're going to have a little chat, you and I. See, the name of the game is hide and go seek. You're playing hide and say, here I am. Capiche?
Capiche. We have Francine on the line from Woodstock. Hi, Francine.
Hi, guys. How you doing tonight?
We're doing great. Do you, well, it's not even a movie clip. Do you know who's speaking in that television clip?
Yes, my guess is John Stamos.
Yes, and you are correct. Definitely right.
People mistake me for him all the time.
You look a lot like him.
I know.
And that's why I have a crush on you as well as John Stamos.
Know. How could you not?
I don't know. You are a winner. You have won a pair of tickets to the world premiere musical adventure, The Man Who Murdered Sherlock Holmes, playing at the Mercury Theater. That's in Chicago. Do you love that?
Absolutely. I love a good mystery.
That's exactly what it is. You can check it out at mercurytheaterchicago.com. The Mercury Theater is a terrific theater. It was recently renovated. It's on Southport, right near Wrigley Field. It's in a great area. I hope you really enjoy that show.
Thank you so much.
Oh, we're so glad you called in. Thank you.
Thanks, Francine. All right, it's time for some comedy. Comedy tonight. All right, we have Fibber, McGee, and Molly, one of the best comedy shows of all of the Golden Age of Radio, premiered in 1935. And they were real-life husband and wife, Jim and Marianne Jordan. They were natives of Peoria, Illinois. This is a great comedy show. They on the show, they lived at 79 Wistful Vista in Wistful Vista, USA. It was written by Don Quinn. And, you know, some of his neighbors would pay a visit to Fibber McGee and Molly's house. Some of those neighbors were Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, played by the great Hal Perry, Mayor LaTrivia, played by Gail Gordon, Wallace Wimple, the old-timer Horatio K. Boomer, all played by Bill Thompson, Doc Gamble, played by Arthur Q. Bryan, who was the voice of Elmer Fudd, and then there was Teeny, the little girl that lived next door, and that was played by Marion Jordan. So one of the gags, Fibber's hall closet, he would open up the closet, all this junk would pour out. He'd say, man, I got to clean that closet one of these days.
Kind of like your house,
yeah,
Carl. It's a big mess.
Total mess.
What a pig.
Johnson's
man.
Wax was this longtime sponsor. Harlow Wilcox, the announcer, is heard on NBC. I think you will love this now. Let's tune this in. Let's go back to December 12th, 1939. It's called The Jewelry Store Robbery. It stars Jim and Marion Jordan as Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber, McGee, and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber, McGee, and Molly with Jimmy Shields, Bill Thompson, and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with Hallelujah. Has just raised its ugly head. The Wistful Vista Jewelry, We Fix Watches and Do You Need Glasses Company has just discovered that a $12,000 necklace is missing. And here, sympathizing with the tearful anguish of the proprietress, Mrs. Teitelbaum, we find Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Now, Mrs. Teitelbaum, don't take it so hard, dearie. I'm sure the necklace will turn up someplace.
So am I. It'll turn up in our pawn shop in Toledo, maybe.
Oy, are you at $12,000? Ah, there.
Now, look, Mrs. Teitelbaum, you want to recover this diamond necklace without no fuss nor scandal, don't you? And you don't want to dish out a heavy reward to the cops, do you?
You're talking.
I was wondering for a minute. The one guy in the world that can clear this robbery up for you and get that necklace back.
Mr. McGee, if you can do it, I'm so grateful to you. You can have anything in the store.
Oh.
At a big discount. but what experiences are you having, please?
What experience? Why, Mrs. Teitelbaum, do you mean to stand there with your head between your bobby pins and tell me you never heard of Detective McGee?
So help me, I didn't.
I'm kind of surprised at you, Tidy. Because I'm well known for crime detection. A brute with my fists and lightning with a shooting iron. Why, when I was only 5 years old, none of the other kids would even split a soda with me because I was so fast on the draw. I could shoot lead out of a revolver quicker than anybody living. Get the lead out, McGee, I was known as in there. Get the lead out, McGee, the go-getting gumshoe Galahad, going great guns at giving the gate to groups of gaudy gamblers with McGream and Gat, gallantly girding the gold to give gangsters a gruesome glimpse of the gallows, and gathering great gobs of glory as a go-between for good government from the grim, gaunt gullies of Galatea to the well. That gives you a rough idea.
The What's your proposition, please?
1% of the value of the necklace. That's $120, and I guarantee results.
All right, go ahead.
McGee, how about the business you had with Mrs. Teitelbaum when you came in here?
Oh, that can wait. I just wanted to tell her that that fountain pen I got in here this morning was... Oh, never mind that now. Come on, Molly, you're working on this case with me.
Oh, goody.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pretend we're playing the thin man.
Oh.
I'll be Myrna Loy, and you can be Dick Powell.
It was William Powell.
Oh, well, he was a dick in the picture.
Mrs. Teitelbaum, have your clerk call the police and get a squad car over here, and then write down the names of whoever's been in the store today. I want a third degree, everybody.
Okay. Jake, a piece of paper and a squad car, please.
McGee, why do you get that poor woman's hopes up like this? As a sleuth, you couldn't find a fire truck in a phone booth.
Molly, for some reason, you seem to lack confidence in me. Tell me this, have I ever completely failed in anything I ever did?
What'd you ever do?
Well, I... Hey, I wonder what became of that squad car. They ought to be here by now. Let me take that phone. Hello, operator. Give me the police department. Oh, is that you, Mert?
No.
How's everything, Mert? Who did? Your cousin Alfred. Not really. With an old-fashioned razor, eh?
Oh.
Oh, my God. From ear to ear, hey?
Oh, gee.
Is that so? What do you know about that, Molly?
Oh, heavenly days, what?
Mert's young cousin shaved himself for the first time this morning. He was so tickled he had a grin from ear to ear. Hello, Mert. Oh, police headquarters don't answer, eh? No, never mind. So long, Mert. One of these days I'm going to really get a number and spoil everything. Well, now, the first thing we got to do, Molly...
Here, Mr. McGee, here's our list of customers who are being in my store today.
Oh, well, thank you, Mrs. Teitelbaum. Phone this list to the police and tell them to have all these suspects here at 2 o'clock. Now, before I start running down any clues, I'd like to ask just one question, if I may.
Go ahead.
Now, think carefully before you answer, Mrs. Teitelbaum.
Right.
Now, here's the question. Does this list you gave me comprise the names of each individual who had access to or means of or by use of accomplices, hereinafter referred to as the party of the second part, any suspicious actions on part of same?
A very shrewd question, McGee.
Can I answer yes or no?
Yes.
No.
Thank you. That clears up an important point.
Somebody here called for a squad car.
Yes, officer. There's been a robbery in here.
What was took?
A diamond necklace, bud, worth 12 grand. You work with me, and I'll cut you in on the publicity.
Okay, that's swell. I take a wonderful picture.
That's all.
Yeah, I usually pose with me revolver in me hand and a stern look on me puss. Like this, see?
That's a stern look, all right. Looks like the stern of a ferry boat. But the publicity will come later, officer.
Okay, Doc. Well, I'll be waiting for you outside in the squad car.
Okay, bud. Now, the first thing we'll... Oh, hey. I just thought of something. Come on, quick.
Where, McGee? Where
Never mind. No time to answer questions. We'll be back shortly, Mrs. Teitelbaum. Come on, Molly. Hurry. Time means everything.
What is this? What is this?
Hey, officer, drive us to 79 Wistful Vista. In a hurry.
Yeah.
Get in the squad car quick, Molly.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Step on it, bud. Get going.
Yes, sir. Oh, my. Here you are, Doc. Shall I surround the house?
No, you come back for us in a half an hour.
Okay, Doc.
That's all clear.
McGee. What was the idea of risking our necks to get to our own house?
Why, Molly, don't you realize? It's 12 o'clock. It's time for lunch.
Oh.
Here's the jewelry store, Doc.
You gotta get them brakes fixed. Oh, come on, Molly. Now that I've had lunch, I can really tackle this jewel robbery. Never could solve a mystery on an empty stomach.
Why not? As a detective, you're strictly from hunger.
Just the same, I can be more nonchalant with a toothpick in my mouth and...
Oh!
Sorry, little girl.
Hi, mister.
Don't stop me now, sis. I'm on a case.
Gee, are you a doctor? Are you?
No, I'm a detective. I said, now listen, sis, I ain't got time to be bandying words with you. You run along about your business, and I'll run along about mine. Go on now, sis, beat it.
Where?
Well, where were you going when I bumped into you?
Don't you know?
How should I know?
Well, gee, I thought you were a detective.
Dad ratted, I am a detective, but how should I know all about you?
Well, I know all about you, I betcha.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, all right. If you know so much, tell me all about me.
Okay.
Okay.
You're 5'7" high, and you weigh 142, and your waistline is 37 inches. And you got a penis-sinus scar on your stomach, and you need to have your tonsils out. And you were born on the 16th of November, and you had cauliflower for lunch, I betcha.
Well, that'll be a censored exclamation. How did you know all that, sis?
I saw it in your insurance application. My uncle sold you the insurance.
Oh, I see. Oh, well, that's pretty simple then.
Sure.
I thought you were really... Hey, how'd you know I had cauliflower for lunch? That wasn't in my insurance application.
I know it.
Well, and how'd you figure that out?
Well, we live just south of you, and there's a north wind today.
All right, that's the first portion of Fibber, McGee and Molly from 1939. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes, but it's time for a break here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, sounds good. Oh, yeah. This is some good jams right here.
Who sings this, Carl?
How, 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 how.
Who is
this?
This
is ZZ Top, right?
Yep.
The great ZZ Top. I remember, oh yeah, fond memory of ZZ Top. They had some good music. I'm trying to think. I think I might have seen them in concert, too, at the Rosemont Horizon years ago.
Yes,
that's
I
how much I like.
That place.
Actually, I think I was delivering pizzas to make a living, and I spent quite a bit of my pizza money.
A lot of tips to go to
that's
Rosemont.
That was a lot of pizzas that I delivered to pay for those tickets, because I probably took a gal pal with me, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Probably. ZZ Top. Yeah. Oh, man. Those were the days, right? You better believe it. So in our next hour, we have a great mystery. You won't want to miss it. It's the Mysterious Traveler. You know what that was all about, Lisa? It's this guy who was on a train, and he was a very kind of ghouly character on a train. He would tell scary stories, and then they would be dramatized.
You asked me if I knew what it was about, and then you just kept talking.
Well, did you know what it was about?
Well, we've talked about it before.
Yes, okay.
We've played a few of these
well,
before.
That's all right.
It's
well,
a good one.
We're going to have one for all of our listeners. Terrific episode called The Good Die Young from 1944. Maurice Tarplin as the Mysterious Traveler. So don't go away. That's coming up. All right, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari, and the lovely Lisa Wolf to my right, Mike Estella. In front of me, the executive producer, and Shane Reardon. In the booth, hitting all of the right buttons, is our producer on Saturday nights. It's such a great team here. Really appreciate all the hard work that goes into putting this show together. But we have a lot of fun here, don't we, Lisa, Mike, and Shane?
We sure do.
We have a good time. We get to talk to our listeners. It's a lot of fun.
We get to tease each other a little bit.
Yeah. We give each other a hard time.
We like to eat a lot.
We had a fun little party, didn't we, last night?
Yes,
over
we did.
Over at the Casa Amari.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we played some ping pong. Shane, you will be glad to know that I whipped Lisa's you-know-what at ping pong yesterday. I'm telling you, you know. But you know what? I will say this, Lisa. She's pretty good. She beat...
You're now you're just saying
no,
that to make me feel...
you're pretty good.
She hurt my
beat
feelings.
Everybody. Yeah. She was...
She did.
She was
really
mopping
did.
Up the floor with people. I was a little nervous.
Until Carl walked out.
I was a little nervous.
Yeah, I bet you were shaking
in
your boots.
For about 1 millisecond.
Did Carl come out in, like, those tiny shorts that they wear in the ping pong championships?
Yes.
With the... over-exaggerated gym shoes and the sweatband.
He doesn't usually wear any shoes at all.
Sure.
He's usually just barefoot.
I was like, you know...
it's a really attractive
What's
look.
That show? Reno 911?
Yeah.
The guy with the shorts? That's what I wore.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's what I wore.
Please.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, my. There's an image that'll never leave my mind.
You can't unthink that now,
no.
Right?
So now we're going to have to post some pictures, right, Mike?
I'm going to post some video at some point.
Oh, some video? Really?
I absolutely do.
Yeah. Lisa was pretty. You're kind of
competitive.
Feeling pretty good until I.
That's true. I was. I think I played 4 games. I beat everybody until I got to you, and I was feeling pretty confident about myself.
You have some good hand-eye coordination there. You did pretty good, Lisa.
Thanks.
Very proud of you.
Yeah.
You did really well.
Thanks.
So, but it was a lot of fun.
It was.
Some good food.
Good friends.
Sweet Caroline's where we got the food from. It was delicious. Hoffman Estates. You have to go there if you live anywhere near Hoffman Estates. You got to check out Sweet Caroline's unbelievable menu. We had pulled pork. Dan was going crazy over it,
Dan
right?
Who?
Your husband, Dan. He's going crazy over it. And
yeah,
we had the cornbread and, oh my gosh, it was just so much. We had some terrific pizzas. We had.
So what'd you do with all those leftovers?
I ate it all today.
I bet you did.
Yeah, I ate it all. we had a great time, and thanks to Sweet Caroline's because we enjoyed the food very much. And we had all kinds of fun stuff, and you say you're going to post some video, Mike?
Yeah, I'll get to it at some point.
All right, very, very good. Okay, we have the mysterious traveler coming your way here, but first, it's time for our sponsor segment, Cat's Pride Celebrity Scoop.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop.
This actor stars in the upcoming comedy Keeping Up with the Joneses about a suburban couple who becomes tangled in an international espionage plot when they discover that their neighbors are government spies.
Okay, now the number to call, 312-981-7200 if you want to win 2 tickets to see The Man Who Murdered Sherlock Holmes at the Mercury Theater in Chicago. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Don Draper in Mad Men.
But he also talked about a deeper bond with the product, nostalgia.
All right, there you go. If you know who that is, call us right now, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf. And we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
But he also talked about a deeper bond with the product, nostalgia.
And once again, I believe that's a TV clip, and we have Howard on the line from Milwaukee. Hey, Howard.
Hey.
Hey, who is that voice?
It's John Hamm.
That definitely is John Hamm, and guess what?
What?
You're a winner.
Great.
All right, you've won a pair of tickets to the world premiere musical adventure, The Man Who Murdered Sherlock Holmes. It's playing right now through March 20th at the Mercury Theater in Chicago. It's on Southport. It's a terrific theater and a really great show. I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Let us know what you think of the show, okay?
Thanks, Howard. Appreciate
it. Take care.
All right, it's time for The Mysterious Traveler. This came to radio in 1943. It was written by Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan, who also created the series. It ran on Mutual Radio. Maurice Tarplin played the eerie character on the train. He didn't have a name. He was just known as the Mysterious Traveler. He traveled on the train. And we joined him on another journey into the strange and terrifying each week. And this didn't have any big stars, but it had the best supporting actors of New York, because this was broadcast out of New York. Jackson Beck, who we heard earlier as Philo Vance, Lawson Zerbe, Elspeth Eric, Louis Van Ruten, Mason Adams, who was the Smuckers man for years. And it was mostly sustained, didn't have any sponsors. It made no transition to television, although it did make a transition to comics and magazines. And in 1952, it spawned a series of comic books, which I think is pretty cool. All right, we're going to tune this in now. This is part one of the Mysterious Traveler, The Good Die Young is the name of this episode from February 27th, 1944. Part one, The Mysterious Traveler.
The Mysterious Traveler. This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join him on another journey into the realm of the strange and terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves. I hope it's not making you nervous, being alone with me here in the dark. Darkness stirs strange terrors in some minds, particularly those of children. For children live in a world of their own, a world far removed from that of adults. Who among us knows the psychology of the child mind, with its devious thoughts and actions, as in the tale of The Good Die Young. Years ago, when I was practicing medicine, I brought a child into the world, a girl who was named Sandra. In the years that followed, she grew into an extremely beautiful and clever child. But my story begins the day that Martha, the housekeeper, was finishing her duties for the last time.
Sandra, come in here. I want to see you. Sandra!
Were you calling me, Martha?
Yes. I told you to come right home after school. Where have you been?
Oh, I'm sorry, Martha. I didn't hear you tell me to come home right after school. I'm sorry. Truly, I am.
Save your acting for your father, young lady. It hasn't fooled me for a long time. Sandra, since your mother died, you're becoming more and more of a problem every day. Well, at least after tonight, I won't have to put up with your lies and your thousand and one little tricks.
What do you mean, Martha?
Your father won't be needing a housekeeper anymore. I'm leaving tonight.
But why?
Well, I'm not supposed to tell you. You may as well know now as later. Your father is bringing home a new mother for you tonight.
A new mother?
Yes. He's just married again.
But I don't want a new mother. Daddy and I don't need anyone else. We're happy the way we are.
Sandra, stop screaming.
I won't have it. Do you hear? I won't have it.
Your new mother's a very fine woman. I met her last night.
I hate her. I hate her. Daddy's mine and no one else's. She hasn't any right to him.
If you don't stop that screaming, I'll tell your father when he comes home tonight.
Oh, no, no, no. Don't do that. I'll be good. But I hate her and I always will. I'll never stop hating her.
That's a fine way to talk. Perhaps I ought to warn the poor woman about Sandra. Well, then it's none of my business. Besides, she'll find out about her soon enough.
It's ridiculous you're carrying me across the threshold.
All right, darling. It's tradition in my family to carry the bride over the threshold. Oh, there you are.
Oh, Stephen, what a lovely heart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you haven't seen the best part of it yet. Sandra.
Do you think she'll like me, Stephen? I do so want her to.
Of course she will.
Perhaps you should have told her about us, instead of bragging it to her so unexpectedly like
this.
Oh,
nonsense, Helen. I know my daughter. She's a wonderful child. And she'll fall madly in love with you at the first sight. Just as her father did. Sandra, where are you? Daddy.
Daddy, you're home early. Oh, I'm so glad.
How are you, darling?
Oh, Daddy.
I have a surprise for you.
A surprise?
Mm-hmm. Sandra, this is Helen. Helen, I want you to meet my daughter, Sandra.
Hello, Sandra.
Hello.
Darling, the surprise I just mentioned is Helen. We were married this afternoon. That means that Helen is now your mother.
Oh, Daddy, that's wonderful. Now I'll have a mother just like all the other girls do. Oh, I'm so glad.
So am I, Sandra. And I'm sure we're all going to be very happy together.
Of course we are.
That night, after the family had said goodbye to Martha and seen her off, Sandra was sent to bed. She lay quietly in the darkness, thinking. Occasionally she would speak softly to her doll, Barbara.
She hasn't any right being here, Barbara. Daddy and I were perfectly happy until she came along. Tonight he didn't even notice me. Just kept looking at her. Well, she shan't have him. He's always been mine and he always will be.
There. That's enough of that. Now let me see.
The second time this afternoon, I've asked you not to pound the keys that way. That's no way to play.
I'm sorry, Mother.
It's not only the piano, dear. There are many other little things. You pay no attention when I speak to you about them.
I don't mean to do them, Mother. I just forget.
Well, please try to remember, dear. Now, I want you to play the piano as you did last night for Daddy. He was very pleased.
Yes, Mother.
I thought I asked you to stop pounding the piano like that.
But, Mother, I was just composing a new piece for Daddy.
Well, that wasn't music, Sandra, but just noise. That'll be enough for today.
Hello, beautiful.
How are you, darling?
Well, why wasn't Sandra at the door to meet me? She's all right, isn't she?
Oh, of course, dear. Stephen?
Hmm?
I was a bit angry with Sandra this afternoon.
Angry with Sandra? Why, what'd she do?
Well, several times this afternoon I had to speak to her about pounding the piano, being loud and discordant.
Huh. Well, that isn't like Sandra. You know how well she plays.
Yes, of course. That wasn't the way she played today.
Well, I'll go up and see her.
All right. Supper will be ready soon.
All right, Ellen. Why, Sandra. What's this?
Oh, Daddy, Daddy.
Well, what's wrong, dear? You'll never cry.
I was only trying to compose a new piece for your birthday next month.
A new piece for my birthday?
Yes. I wanted to surprise you.
Oh, there, there, dear. You mustn't cry. I'm sure, Mother, I understand. You didn't mean to be bad. Now, here, let me wipe your tears.
Oh, Daddy, I love you so. I just wanted to compose something wonderful for you.
I understand, darling.
Oh, Daddy. You always understand.
Your supper ready, dear?
Mm-hmm. Where's Sandra?
She'll be down in a minute. Helen.
Yes, Stephen?
She really didn't mean to pound on the piano and get on your nerves. It's just she was trying to compose a new piece for me.
Stephen, it wasn't music. It was just noise.
Well, you mustn't be harsh with her. You know what children are like. In their enthusiasm, they forget what they're told.
But, Stephen, I don't know exactly what to say.
It's just a question of being patient with her, winning her love.
All right, Stephen. Perhaps I was a bit impatient with her. You know I want nothing more than for the three of us to be happy together.
I know that, darling. And the three of us will be happy together.
In the weeks that followed, Helen tried to overlook Sandra's slamming of doors and constant droppings of objects and other nerve-wracking incidents. In time, she felt, Sandra would come to accept her love and guidance. It was just a matter of patience.
Sandra? Is that you?
Yes, Mother.
Please sit down, dear. I want to talk to you.
All right, but do hurry. Daddy will be home soon.
Sandra, every day I've been giving you milk money for school. Why haven't you been buying milk with that money?
But I have been, Mother.
Now, please, Sandra, I won't punish you. I just want to know what you've been doing with that money.
I've been buying milk with it.
Please, Sandra. Mrs. Gordon, your teacher, told me you haven't bought milk for almost a month now.
But I have. She just doesn't
Sandra?
Have
to... I won't have you lying to me. Now, that's your father. We'll see what he has to say about this.
You don't understand. You just don't understand.
Stephen?
Hello, darling. Oh, Sandra, what are you crying about?
about?
I'm sorry, Stephen, but Sandra's been misbehaving. Mm-hmm. I think you'd better speak to her.
You just don't understand.
What's she done, Helen?
Mrs. Gordon, her teacher, told me today that for the past month, Sandra hasn't been buying milk with her milk money.
Is that true, Sandra?
And what's worse, Stephen, when I asked Sandra about it, she lied and said that she had been buying milk at school.
Why, Sandra, it isn't like you to lie about things.
I didn't mean to lie about it. I just wanted to keep it a surprise.
What a surprise.
Your birthday present.
Oh?
I saved my milk money so that I could buy you a pipe. It's here in this box.
But Sandra, you know I'd have given you money to buy a birthday present for Daddy.
It isn't the same thing. I wanted to buy him a present with my own money.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sandra. Well, you might have told me about it when I asked you.
But then it wouldn't have been a real surprise. I did want to surprise Daddy, so...
But you have, darling. This is a beautiful pipe.
No, the surprise is spoiled. Your birthday isn't till tomorrow.
Well, this is much better, darling. It means I'll be able to smoke this pipe tonight. Oh, now, please stop trying. You go upstairs and wash your face and hands, huh?
All right, Daddy.
I'm sorry, Stephen, but I had no idea what she'd done with the money, and she did lie when I asked her about it.
Well, if you'd only have a little more faith in her, Helen. I know it's difficult to understand her at times, but that's because as a child she looks at things differently.
I'm sorry, Stephen, if you think I've failed with her.
Oh, but you haven't, Helen. I'm sure that in time she'll come to love you as much as she loves me.
I don't know, Stephen. I often wonder about that.
Ooh, man. What do you think of that, Lisa? Some scary stuff there.
It's mysterious.
It is mysterious.
It's a very traveling mysterious.
Yes, it is. Mysterious Traveler, The Good Die Young from 1944. We'll get back to that in just a few moments. I do want to remind our listeners that we have a Facebook page where you can communicate with us. We get back to everybody if they ask questions about the show. About Lisa, personal life, you know, anything. Lisa gets back to everybody, answers every question.
I'm an open book.
Pretty much,
almost.
Yeah. And we would love to hear from you. We'd love to know what you want us to play here. There's thousands of classic radio shows. What do you want to hear? We want to know because we'll play it. Somebody earlier said they want to hear The Great Gildersleeve. Well, guess what? Tonight, because we'll be back here in about 20 hours, get back here at 11 o'clock. And we're going to play The Great Gildersleeve for you along with Inner Sanctum Mysteries and Dragnet. That is tonight at 11 p.m. on the WGN Radio Theater. How do you talk to us? At our Facebook page, right, Mike?
Absolutely. Facebook, WGN Radio Theater.
All right, and make sure you like us. We want to build our likes. I think we're up to nearly 1,300 likes, which is not enough. We've got thousands and thousands of listeners out there. Please go to the Facebook at your convenience, but please like us. We want to build our likes. WGN Radio Theater, that's the name of this radio show. And just to remind our listeners, we're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 10 p.m. Nope, 11 p.m. I like to say 10 because I get here at 10. 11 p.m. till 2. I guess I want to start an hour earlier. Maybe
you
that's subliminally.
We should work on that.
Subliminally, I want to start an hour earlier, which would mean I'd have to get here at 9 o'clock.
Let's just focus on the here and now.
Yeah. 11 p.m. till 2 in the morning, Saturday and Sundays, we play classic radio. Don't miss it. Mark your calendar. We have a website for this show. It's WGNRadioTheater.com. We have our entire schedule there. And we have some fun stuff coming up for the Valentine's Day weekend, I think, on Sunday. Is that what we're doing?
I think we're all spending Valentine's Day weekend together.
Yeah.
We're
playing three
romantic.
Three radio shows that have Jack Benny in it. You know why? Because he was born on Valentine's Day. And we have a suspense episode that he stars in, a Jack Benny program, and a Burns and Allen show. You won't want to miss that. So lots of fun stuff. Just check out our website, WGNRadioTheater.com. Okay?
And we accept chocolates on Valentine's
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. All right, let's get back to this. This is called The Good Die Young on The Mysterious Traveler.
As the weeks went by, Helen found herself coming no closer to winning Sandra's confidence. It wasn't that Sandra was unfriendly, but there was an air of reserve about her, which vanished only in her father's presence. Helen felt Stephen watching her anxiously when Sandra was about, and sought to reassure him. Her one thought was to preserve their happiness.
Hello, Helen.
Hello, dear.
Oh, what happened to that vase, dear?
Sandra broke it.
Huh? Well, accidents will happen.
Stephen, this is the fourth piece she's broken in 2 weeks. And each of them were pieces I've treasured and had for years.
Why, Helen, you sound as though Sandra had deliberately broken those vases because they were yours.
Well, why is it that only my things are broken?
Oh, Helen, surely you don't believe she's deliberately breaking your things.
I don't know what to believe. The first few times I thought it was an accident, but now...
But Helen...
Oh, please, Stephen, let's not quarrel. Perhaps I'm wrong. I admit I haven't any proof. It's just all the little things adding up.
Helen, what are you talking about?
Oh, you wouldn't understand even if I told you.
Where's Sandra?
In her room, I suppose.
Well, I'll go up and see what she's doing, huh?
All right.
Sandra, it's Daddy. You in your room? It's funny. She isn't here. Hello, what's this? A note addressed to me. Dear Daddy, I'm sorry about the broken vase. Tried my best to be a good girl, but everything I do seems wrong. I make Mother very unhappy, so I'm running away. I love you very much and always will. Your daughter, Sandra.
After searching vainly for an hour in the dark and cold, Stephen returned and notified the police. All through the long hours of the night, he and Helen sat up, not saying a word, each afraid to speak.
Fear of what might be said. As the first rays of dawn showed, the doorbell rang. Stephen rushed to answer it.
Mr. Hammond?
Sandra.
Oh, Daddy, Daddy.
Shh, darling, everything's all right now.
I'm the police patron from the 55th Street Station, Mr. Hamilton. One of the officers on the force just found her.
Thank you. Thank you very much for bringing her home.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Hamilton. This is our job. Goodbye.
Goodbye. There, dear. Don't cry.
Oh, Daddy, it was so dark out there. And I thought I'd never see you again.
What a thing to say.
How do you feel, Sandra? You want me to take Stephen and put it to bed?
No, I'll do it, Helen.
All right, Stephen. Just as you say. Is she all right, Stephen?
She just fell asleep. I hope her being out all night won't have any after effects.
Stephen, you feel I'm to blame for her running away, don't you?
Of course not, Helen. It's just that... Well, you don't seem to understand her.
But, Stephen, I've tried so hard. Oh, it's no use. She doesn't want me here, never has.
Helen, how can you talk like that? Why, she was delighted the day I brought you here as my wife.
Yes, I thought she was in the beginning. But now I know she was just pretending.
Pretending?
Yes, Stephen. From the first moment she saw me, she resented me. She feels I've come between you, taken her place in your affection.
Oh, Helen, how can you say such a thing?
It's true, I tell you. She sees me as a rival for your love.
You're just imagining all that.
I'm not, I tell you. Oh, it's no use, Steve. We can't go on this way.
What do you mean?
Don't you see? We aren't happy anymore. Instead of things improving, they get worse. Perhaps it would be best if we were to separate.
Helen, I won't hear of it. I love you, darling. I wouldn't want to live without you. Whatever misunderstandings we may have about Sandra, I'm sure we can straighten them out.
I don't know, Steve.
If you love me, Helen, you won't give up so easily. Please, say you won't leave.
All right, Steve. I won't leave. Perhaps we will be able to work this out. I hope so.
Sandra, you awake, darling?
Yes, Daddy.
Sandra, Mother and I were very upset when you ran away last night. Mother seems to think you ran away because you
you couldn't get along with her. She felt so badly about it, she wanted to go away.
She did?
Yes. But I told her how much we both loved and needed her. So she's promised to stay.
Oh. I see.
Sandra, you will try to be a good girl and do as Mother wants, won't you? It would make Daddy very happy.
Oh, Daddy, I'd do anything to make you happy, anything.
That's a good girl, darling. Now, you get up and get dressed, huh? I'll wait for you downstairs.
All right, Daddy. He just doesn't understand. He should have let her go, but she's still here. And she's going to stay. I won't have it. I won't have it. I hate her. I hate her.
A week passed. A week in which Sandra's behavior pleased Helen no end. At last it seemed they were going to be the happy family she had always dreamed they would be.
Helen!
Yes, dear?
Will you bring my coat with you when you come downstairs? Sandra and I are going for a walk.
All right, Stephen. I'll get it and be right down.
Daddy, can we walk down to the river?
Oh, we won't have enough time for that, Sandra.
Stephen?
Hmm?
I have your coat, but I can't find your scarf.
Oh, the scarf's down here, Helen. Just bring the coat.
Oh, all right. Stephen, I hope...
Helen! Helen, are you all right? Helen, speak to me.
Daddy, is she dead?
No, Sandra, don't talk like that. Quick, phone Dr. Smith at once.
I arrived at the Hamilton home to find Helen suffering from shock, but otherwise unhurt. I was somewhat disturbed, however, to find her very nervous and run down.
She'll be all right, won't she, Doctor?
Yes, of course. I'm going to leave you a prescription, Mrs. Hamilton. It's something that will help quiet your nerves. You're to take it twice a day. Here's the prescription, Mr. Hamilton.
Thank you, Doctor. I'll have it filled at once.
Well, Sandra, how are you? You've been so quiet, I hardly knew you were here.
I'm fine, thank you.
You're growing up to be quite a young lady. Are you still troubled by nightmares?
Yes, she still has them once in a while.
No, it's just her nerves. If she continues to have them, you might give her some of the medicine I've prescribed for your wife. Well, I must be leaving. Goodbye, Mrs. Hamilton, and... stay in bed a few days.
I will, Doctor. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Doctor. Well, darling, you gave us quite a scare.
Yes, I slipped on something on the top step.
Hmm. You must have slipped on a marble, dear. I found 7 or 8 of them on the top step.
A marble? Sandra, were they your marbles?
No, Mother. They belonged to Margie. She must have left them on the stairs when we were playing here.
Oh, I see.
It wasn't my fault. Truly it wasn't.
Of course it wasn't, Sandra. Mother knows you wouldn't leave marbles lying around where she could slip on them. Isn't that so, Ellen?
Yes, Stephen. I'm sure Sandra wouldn't want anything to happen to me. Sandra, will you come into Mother's room a moment, please?
Yes, Mother.
The medicine that Dr. Smith prescribed for me is in the bathroom. Will you get it for me, please?
All right, Mother.
You'll find it in the medicine chest. It's in a blue bottle.
Yes, I know what it looks like. Oh, here it is.
That's fine, Sandra. Just bring it to me.
Here you are, Mother.
Thank you, dear. Oh, Sandra, this isn't the medicine that Dr. Smith prescribed for me. Didn't you read the label? This bottle has poison in it.
Poison?
Why, yes. It's right here in red letters on the label.
Oh, I'm sorry, but this bottle is blue, too. It looks just like the one with your medicine.
Yes, it does at that. Now, I'll put this bottle of poison back and get me my medicine.
Yes, Mother.
I'll have to get rid of that poison. It's too dangerous to keep in the medicine chest.
Would have been awful if you took the poison, wouldn't it, Mother? Or you might have died. No, go away. I hate you. Oh, I hate you. He's mine. You said heaven is mine. We don't want
darling,
you. We
darling,
don't want
wake
you.
Wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, Daddy. Don't leave me.
Well, course I won't, Sandra.
Dear, she's so frightened.
Yes, she's not nervous for hours. Darling, there's nothing to cry about now.
Oh, Daddy, I was so frightened.
Come here a moment, will you, please?
All right, Ellen.
Oh, Daddy, don't leave me.
No, no, Sandra, I'm not going to leave you. I'm just going to see what Mother wants. What is it, Ellen?
Stephen, Dr. Smith said that if she had a nightmare, some of the medicine he prescribed for me would help her.
Well, Sandra doesn't like taking medicine.
But this medicine's very easy to take, and it'll have her asleep in no time.
If you think it's best.
Yes, I'm sure it is. Now, you go back to Sandra while I get the medicine and a glass.
All right, Ellen. Now, Sandra. You must stop your crying. Daddy's here.
Don't go away, Daddy. I want you to stay with me.
Of course I'll stay with you. What were you dreaming about, dear?
I don't know. It was all so mixed up. Oh, Daddy, will you always love me more than anybody else in the world?
Of course. Now, stop your crying.
All right, Stephen, I have it. Now, if you just have Sandra sit up.
Come on, darling. Sit up now. That's it.
What's Mother doing?
She's pouring you some medicine. It'll help you sleep, darling.
Medicine?
Yes. It's the same medicine Mother takes for her own nerves.
No, no, I don't want it.
Now, please, Sandra, it'll make you feel much better.
No, don't come near me. I don't want
it. Sandra, Mother takes it twice a day. There's nothing to it.
No, I won't take it. I won't.
Perhaps we'd better let it go, honey.
Nonsense, Stephen. She'll have us up all night if she doesn't take it.
All right.
Now, Sandra, stop being a baby and take this medicine.
No, Daddy, don't let her make me take it. Don't let her.
Sandra, are you going to let me give you this quietly, or do I have to make you take it?
No, no, it'll kill me.
Here, let me hold your head. That's it.
No.
Now, Sandra, stop clenching your teeth. Open your mouth. Do you hear?
Daddy, don't let her.
There, he's taken it. All this fuss over nothing.
Ellen, she's talking.
Daddy, Daddy, it burns.
Sandra, what's wrong?
It's burning me. Daddy, help me. Help me, I can't breathe.
Helen, quick. Call Dr. Smith. Tell him it's an emergency.
Stephen, here's Dr. Smith.
Let me see her.
She's been unconscious for 10 minutes now. Doctor, you must do something.
I'm afraid it's too late, Mr. Hamilton. She's dead.
Oh, no. No, she can't be.
I'm sorry.
How can she be? We only gave her the medicine you prescribed for Helen.
Yes, here it is.
Let me see it. But this medicine wouldn't kill her. It's only a nerve tonic. You can see...
Doctor, what is it?
Why, this is the bottle, all right. But the medicine in it isn't the medicine I prescribed.
But it is. I took some of it last night.
I assure you, this isn't the medicine I prescribed.
Then what is in that bottle?
It smells like carbolic acid.
Carbolic acid?
But that's impossible. Look at the label. You can see it's my medicine.
Yes, the label's right, but someone poured out the medicine I prescribed and replaced it with carbolic acid.
Oh, no.
But why? Why should anyone want to do such a thing? Who could possibly want to kill Sandra? Everyone loved her. Ask Helen. She'll tell you that Sandra...
Stephen. Why are you looking at me like that? Surely you don't believe I poisoned her. Stephen. No. No!
This is the mysterious traveler again. Have you enjoyed our little trip? By the way, do you have a child in your home? If so, I do trust it isn't angry with you. You can't be too careful with children. Why, I recall another child who, after being punished by his parents, took a razor and... Oh, you're getting off at the next stop. I'm sorry. Perhaps you'll join me again soon. I take this same train every week at the same time.
You've just heard Chapter 13 of The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and unusual brought to you each week by Station WOR. In tonight's program, The Good Die Young, Betty Jane Tyler played Sandra. The Mysterious Traveler, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is directed by Jock McGregor. Original music was played by Doc Whipple. Listen next week to a tale titled
Design for Death.
Another tale of the Mysterious Traveler. The Mysterious Traveler is presented by WOR Mutual every Sunday at 7 over most of these stations. This is Mutual.
Sunday evening, 7 p.m. on Mutual, you could turn your radio dial and hear The Mysterious Traveler. And Maurice Tarplin played The Mysterious Traveler. He did a lot of shows out of New York. And another show that he was on that we play quite a bit here, Boston Blackie. He was not Boston Blackie. He was Inspector Faraday on Boston Blackie. And he used to have the same kind of ribbing kind of relationship you and I have. You know, we rib each other a little bit.
I would rib you.
They loved each other, but they ribbed each other. Boston Blackie and Maurice Tarplin as Inspector Faraday. We play those here. We'll play another one soon. It's one of my favorites.
I know.
You know that, right?
Yep.
Okay, this was called The Good Die Young from February 27th, 1944. Hope you enjoy that, The Mysterious Traveler. So coming up tonight in about, I don't know, 20 hours from now?
Something like that.
Something like 20 hours from now? We should do the math exactly. I'm not good at math.
I was just thinking. I have to go back. Only the good. Okay. I wonder if the song, Only the Good Die Young, came from this.
I guarantee it didn't.
Okay.
All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.